Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
Another week. We're into March now, right?
It's March.
In like a lion.
Yeah.
Out like a lamb.
Yeah, right? Really.
And I've just been informed that, is it daylight savings time starts
this weekend?
This weekend?
Saturday night, 2 a.m., turn the clock. Spring forward, we gain
spring
an hour.
Spring forward, yeah, there we go.
Fall back, right?
Actually, of course, we don't really gain an hour.
Whatever,
it's a 25-hour day.
That way.
Yeah, could be. So let's see. So what's up around town now? Let's see.
Oh, there seem to be a lot of extracurricular meetings as well. I mean, the city council was kind of a snooze, but sort of. But it's just, tonight's going to be.
Oh, moving. Last night's meeting was pleasantly short.
Very pleasant.
And I kind of wanted it to be short, so they were very helpful in that regard.
But there's several meetings. There's tonight's meeting, which is
going to be
packed.
Yeah, I see.
Everyone's calling out the troops.
So there's three meetings in the month of March, the first of which begins at 6?
6 o'clock tonight, the Housing Committee.
So this is on this affordable housing overlay proposal.
Right.
I think they've modified what the original proposal was, at least so I hear. And when I was looking at it, honestly, I didn't really see a whole lot that was different, but I think they're trying to make it a little more saleable.
Okay.
And we'll see. I'm going to stop by.
Yeah. We'll miss the presentation by who? The Envision people?
I think it's Community Development Department. Honestly,
okay.
I think the mayor is trying to make clear, is the overlay proposal and then there's Envision. They have nothing to do with each other.
Well, you probably read the listserv today. There was a back and forth between.
But what was happening with Envision is that there were certain things that were, I guess, fair to say, we're independently going on. I said, we have to wait till Envision comes out with the great grand vision.
That's
which
a good point.
I can't honestly say that happened.
I mean, it's got to do with zoning. It's got to do with density.
Is
it 3-4 layers? Is it 6? Not layers, stories.
Right. Yeah. But there was this sort of these like weird intermingling of streams. So the affordable housing overlay or so-called affordable housing overlay was actually proposed from the city council probably going back to like 2013.
Okay, so it has nothing to do with Envision.
It did not have anything to do with it. But the thing
is
that when the Envision process was going and I was on the Housing Working Committee, it became one of the things that were being proposed.
I see.
And I think kind of to make nice with the city councilors, it was a certain kind of emphasis was put on it by some of the staff. Maybe not the best strategic thing to have done, actually, as it turns out. But
so you're saying originally it was city council driven?
Yes, it
not
was actually
community development driven.
I think Mark McGovern and Dennis Benzan were probably the ones who initially promoted the idea.
Okay,
but I don't know that they had any specific notion about what it was going to mean at that time.
Right,
but that's kind of where it initiated. Some people might argue that, in fact, the Envision process actually served to delay certain things that might otherwise have been acted upon earlier. But I'm not so sure that that's really true because, honestly, not to be difficult about it, but the Community Development Department has not exactly been super proactive. And I think they kind of liked having the delay associated with the Envision. Did it lead to better outcomes? I'm not convinced. At this point,
does Envision deal at all with table of uses, or is that part of that argument? Because it seems like that would be natural.
I don't think so. I think if there were certain other things that were sort of outside of the master plan process, they kind of got dovetailed in. One of them was the the climate change resiliency study.
Right.
That kind of got dovetailed in.
Right.
I think we found out kind of late in the game that this affordable housing overlay sort of got kind of thrown into
that
there.
Well, affordable housing in general.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
transit is in there as a thing, right?
You know, but honestly, the mobility piece of Envision to me leaves a little bit to be desired.
Wow.
Honestly, I'm not particularly impressed.
Yeah.
You know, there's the usual things you expect, like bike lanes and yada yada yada, right?
Yeah.
But things like transit related things were largely any good ideas that I've heard recently were coming out of this transit advisory committee, which had nothing to do with the Envision process. So, but that's okay. I mean, I don't think anybody ever thought that the Envision process was supposed to be the be all end all.
Well, I think history tells us
idea
that
making.
We do pay a lot of money for these reports, which can be helpful, but they don't usually end up. I mean, remember I asked you that?
They take up about this amount of width on a shelf.
I have to say, though, I think the zero waste one that HDR has been working on will make a difference because there's some real tangible changes. And once again, people, if are interested, that they really should Look into that.
Yeah.
Because the deadline's coming.
But that's also something that wasn't really part of the Envision process either.
No, it wasn't. Very but much to me, solid waste and trash removal and recycling and all that is quality of life and environmental and everything else.
Yeah. So I forget the exact dates, but for these affordable housing overlay.
Oh right, this is the first meetings. Of three, so I so don't today have the other two.
Yeah, so I would just say you could look either at the Civic Journal calendar or the city's calendar. You can get those three dates.
City calendar, hearing schedule.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of going to be the big topic that people are going to be batting around for the next few weeks.
It's also an election year. So.
And it's definitely an election year, and people are sort of trying to put, you know.
Be interesting to see how some of the counselors feel about it, because it's sort of like.
I know.
You know?
I mean, I'm not trying to be like super cynical about this, but it is political reality that in a municipal election year, people have to kind of carve out a little piece of turf and say, I'm going to be the champion of this or that issue, or we are going to be the champions of this or that issue. Right. You know, and what those issues are going to be, not entirely clear. This is certainly one of them, I think. You know, the sort of, should we do a significant increase in subsidized housing around the city, or should we just be growing housing?
Right.
You know, I think there are some different points of view about this. You know, so that'll certainly be one. Will bikes be forgotten this year? I don't think so.
Isn't there another meeting about, or there was last week? Cycle or something.
Well, you know, there is a kind of a curiosity. I didn't go to that meeting probably because I would have been a bit of aggravated by it. Mm. But there was a meeting where there's a proposal to make it sort of a municipal ordinance.
Oh right.
That every single time when a road gets redone, that they must incorporate in things that were part of the bicycle plan.
And,
you know, I don't know how many times people have to say that plan was, quote, aspirational.
Did that meeting already happen where they're going to discuss that? They wanted to make it part of an ordinance.
I think it was like February 28th or thereabout. So they basically want to make it sort of like so that the manager doesn't even have flexibility. Mm-hmm. The traffic department has no flexibility. Community development has no flexibility because we're going to make it into an ordinance that thou shalt do it or not. You know, I don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Probably stayed in committee, maybe.
Hard to say. Mm. You know, the thing is, I think as we learned in 2017, you can score some political points by playing to the bike crowd. So people are going to probably continue to do it.
But they have to vote in Cambridge.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the difficulty is that, you know, what I don't like to, I like to leave the manager in a position where, and staff in a position where they can make quality decisions.
Right.
And somebody just lays down the law and says, you must do it this way.
Yeah.
And they say, but we really thought hard about it and we've got good reason to believe it should be otherwise.
Yeah.
There may be a bit of an escape square incorporated into this ordinance that allows the manager and the city staff to actually do their job.
So we're not really at that language yet, as far as you
know. No, I think it's not at the level of being at the ordinance. Actually, is it at the ordinance committee? I think it is, actually.
I don't know. That's right. We'll have to look into that for the next week's show.
You know, municipal ordinances go a different route than, let's say, zoning ordinances. Zoning ordinances require 2/3 to pass.
And planning board has to.
You got a planning board hearing, you know, and that's not actually necessary for municipal ordinances, including
The trash or the zero waste.
Or what they passed last week is this tree thing. By the way, there is a kind of a curiosity for me, you know. Mm-hmm. So everybody was, you know, it was Harold, I was there. They said that the vote on this, whether there should be this one-year moratorium on cutting of trees, passed on a 7-2 vote. But when I look at the city council, the final actions of the city council, it says 9-0.
What happened?
Wasn't
it on an amendment? That they didn't
see, that's the thing. So I'm supposed to know all this stuff, but honestly, I'm a little bit confused.
Yeah.
So maybe it was that there was an amendment to the tree ordinance.
Yeah.
And then there was a proposal to amend the amendment to incorporate this moratorium. So maybe the 7-2 vote, and I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Again, I should know. Was basically to say, okay, let's amend it to include the moratorium, and now on the ordinance change itself, maybe that was unanimous. I'm not 100% sure. I'm the guy who's supposed to know this stuff.
You know,
I let you all down. I'm so sorry.
There might be a counselor that doesn't even know it. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, things go.
I mean, you do notice some errors in the city's materials.
Sure.
So, for example, on last week's shows, I actually mentioned about this thing about this. proposed ban on leaf blowers and referred to it as a zoning petition. You said, how is that zoning?
I said that?
Yes.
You sure about that?
Yes, you did.
I don't remember anymore.
Well, no, but you were right, because it was not a zoning petition.
Okay.
It was a proposed petition to change amend the municipal ordinance on noise control, which is not part of zoning at all.
Huh.
But in the city council description initially, it said a zoning petition was filed.
You're
that's why I thought it was a zoning
that
petition.
Is funny.
But it really wasn't. And that got corrected in the final actions. So anyway, procedural stuff, I guess, right?
So well, maybe you don't want to. There was an article, an opinion piece at Cambridge Chronicle, Cambridge Wicked Local, that everyone was responding to, up in arms by a real estate person.
Oh, this is the Fred.
Oh, you're going to say his name. Fred Meyer.
Yeah,
it
so
caused a lot. I mean,
so he
really was.
So he was opposed to the affordable housing overlay. Now, one thing people do need to understand: everybody's entitled to opinion. Fred Meyer, me, anyone else, you say what you want, right? I think it was really one phrase that some people were really focusing on.
The poor kids.
Right. So, but I think that that's so one person who is opposed to a proposed ordinance change. Makes a statement that contains a sentence.
It was more than one statement in that. That whole thing was pretty. It was
but really, what happened then was that the ABC crowd just jumped all over it and grabbed like a few statements and turned them into sort of like some big rallying cry.
Right.
You know, which is, I think, actually kind of the tone that I'm expecting for the political year. Mm. Right? So, for example, if somebody says we're proposing to have a safe injection site for hypodermic needle drug users,
that's going to be controversial,
right? It won't be sort of say, well, is this a good idea or a bad idea? I think the rhetoric will go something to the tune of how can you support killing people by opposing this? You know, it won't be is this a good idea or not?
Did you catch? I won't name the names. We went to the River Street working group meeting that, and there were a few policemen and. We got to talking about the elephant in the room, Carbon Square, you know.
Carbon Plaza. So
one of them said to me, and they talked about that, and they said, oh, they'll pass that. They're very liberal. I don't know. I'm not going to like it.
Well, but the thing is people who actually have to kind of deal with this situation.
They see it.
Have a bit of a different viewpoint than the political people who are trying to score points on just how progressive they are.
I don't want to see. I mean, I know this is ahead of the game, but do you want to see something in Central Square like that?
The thing is that there's already a lot of facilities, social service agencies, facilities that are there specifically for alcohol and drug abusers, whatever. Mm. We've always said that about Central Square. We're sort of accommodating, but the problem is that every time you take yet another action to put site in here, you are further defining Central Square to be the substance abuse capital of Cambridge, if not the metropolitan area.
Why can't it be connected to a hospital?
Ideally, it should be.
I mean, it's got to be staffed by medical personnel.
Right. So, the thing is, Cambridge is not all just Central Square.
No.
So why not have some of these services and facilities sited in places other than Central Square? Why must it always be Central Square the place to do this?
Okay, but you know what,
in fact, why not Boston, too, for that matter?
Well, but Boston, that's a separate thing. They would have to have their own.
Well, they wouldn't have to have their own because people actually come from other come from
tell
Boston
that to, people
to go to the Needle Exchange.
Yeah,
in Central
guess
Square
what?
Too.
Then that would be awful.
Right, but that's what kind of happens now is that I've heard it said we put in a warming shelter, which I think is a great thing.
Yeah,
in the basement of the senior center.
They get more people.
But in fact, people in various service agencies in Boston say, oh, you need a place to stay? Hop on the Red Line.
Boston
Central
doesn't
Square.
Have a warming center.
They may have it, but the thing is that when there's a need, they basically refer people and say, "Go to Cambridge."
I think I
like the fact that we're very supportive, but the thing is that we also have to be mindful of
guess
the fact.
What? I'm not going to be supportive of that if that comes up.
Yeah,
I mean a truly River Street Central Square resident right now.
I mean, the thing is Central Square can be a lot of things,
but it
shouldn't
be
eternally defined by substance abuse, to whatever degree we can kind of spread the wealth, the better.
But what I'm saying, no matter where you decide, if that passes, every neighborhood's going to have a
Right. And the way things usually work is that it ends up in Central Square.
No, you know, it won't.
Well,
whose final decision is that? No, seriously, is it political or is it the manager who makes that decision?
It's been many factors over the years. Why were a lot of the shelter beds in Central Square? Largely, it was economics. It was where the real estate was cheaper.
Okay, but
once upon a time, that's
so
changed.
The zoning allowed it.
Yeah, actually, during the rent control years, in fact, mm-hmm. there were two ways to take a property. Well, maybe more than two. But effectively, just a few ways of a rent control, a property that would otherwise be rent controlled, getting off rent control, one of which is to have it be owned and operated by a nonprofit.
Okay.
And that included some of the shelter organizations. Okay. So Shelter Inc., CASPAR, whatever. So the thing is that a lot of these properties that would otherwise have been distressed properties mm-hmm. in Central Square, people just sold out because they didn't want to sort of deal with the rent control.
But now I wouldn't say we have distressed properties. We might have some empty storefronts.
No,
but we don't have
so Central Square is at least trying to redefine itself.
What if the police objected to it? Does that have any clout?
You know, honestly, the police are, and I think the police will largely say that, is that they're kind of restrained in saying they see.
So
the way that would have to happen is that the officers would have to speak to the supervisors and then to the commissioner, and then the commissioner should be the one who basically talks to the city council about some of the realities.
I guess that's what I meant. I mean, when I say police, I mean police spokesman.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's down the road.
So anyway, that may be an issue this year, but I think this overlay thing is definitely going to be one of the issues. There are some sort of rumblings even up at the State House that could come trickling down to Cambridge
as
well.
Rent control. You mentioned something. I don't know about this. What is this?
I don't think it's going anywhere.
Is it this thing right here?
Yeah, yeah. So there is a proposal. I think it was kind of, at least in principle, modeled on something that they're doing in Oregon. I think in Oregon they have some sort of statewide rent control. Very different. I think what the Oregon one, in my opinion, is relatively benign. It basically puts a cap on rent increases.
Okay.
And I think it was something like 7% annually plus consumer price, inflation, right? That's not that strict, right?
Mm-hmm.
What the situation sometimes happens is you enact a law, and then once you got your foot in the door, then you amend it a few years down the line to maybe make it stricter. So people are somewhat concerned about that.
Okay.
So the one they're proposing in Cambridge has somewhat different, not in Cambridge, pardon me, I correct,
statewide,
let me correct this.
Right?
No, it's not statewide. Oh. Basically, the proposal, which is the chief person presented, was David Rogers, who's actually is actually, at least his district is part of Cambridge.
Oh, it is?
I believe so, 24th Middlesex. But there are other people like Mike Connolly, our House Socialist.
Sure.
Marjorie Decker is in there as well.
Yeah, of course. And
Pat Jalin, Jonathan Hecton, Senator Sal DiDomenico. Now, the proposal for this one here, I think it's largely...
Is that what this is right here?
Yeah. So people have been likening it to the one in Oregon. There are some exemptions for like three deckers that are owner-occupied, just like it was in the old rent control days. This is largely a cap on rent increases, but unlike the one in Oregon, I think it's one, if I read this correctly, it says that the cap would be no more than 5% or the rate of inflation, whichever is less.
I don't see any. Oh, you're right, right here. Yeah.
So in other words, it's actually a lot more stringent. I don't think it has that much support.
Yeah.
But
any
you never really know.
Any owner occupied three, yes, is not subject to that.
Right.
Which is sort of like the old rent control days.
Well, except they're also saying that, they're making some reference at least to this only applying for people of certain income ranges.
Oh, right.
But then you run into some kind of constitutional issues too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether this thing's going to go anywhere or whether it's just going to be this symbolic act to say
I
proposed it.
I would say if people could tune in, Radio Boston had a whole thing on rent control. I think it might have been Here and Now, but this woman from Stanford actually is against it, says it actually is not good for a community because rent control as it existed does not have any income limits. Think about it.
Right.
Unless you impose, then that's a different kind of rent.
And you actually can't do that because if you do that, then you run into the constitutional issues.
That's right.
Because at that point, basically, the government is telling you who you have to rent to.
Right. So what she's saying is that basically people, again, they stay in them and they have people that really can...
Oh, yeah.
And that's really what happened with rent control.
Well, actually, there's another, I think, a much more significant thing, you know, it has to be acknowledged, which is that, you know, we had it in certain communities in Massachusetts once upon a time. And during those years, the production of new housing stopped.
That's what
and it
she
was,
also
and people
says,
said, but
I think.
But that shouldn't happen because new construction is exempt. Actually, in this one, I think it's exempt for 15 years, and then it could be put under it. But the thing is that if you're an investor and you want to put money into something,
you don't want to be subject.
And the other thing too is that you know once you get it established, you know then you. Then you can modify it. You can, you know, the next iteration will be more strict and then more strict and more strict. So I can understand how people in a real estate business will have some issues with this. So,
look, you know, LA, though, I think Alana brought that up, is proposing for three years if you rent to homeless, but then after that, you can have it back. So it leaves a situation.
Right. So that's what you would call an incentive system.
That's in LA,
and,
right?
You know,
now,
so the thing is, so if you're a kind-hearted person who wants to take in people of certain income or situation,
that's personal dicey situation. Dealing with
it is very dicey.
But if you're specifically targeting homeless people.
Right. But if you're willing to do it, then the government basically gives you an advantage.
In 3 years, it returns to you and you could do market rates. But then, what happens to those people?
Right. Well, you know,
whatever.
Who knows?
But
hopefully, you know, if we were as a society, we'd be doing the right thing. We'd be lifting people up.
Well, and, good you know, luck and helping on that, Robert.
But I know, but that's not the reality oftentimes. But anyway, the main thing is, I think, is that history has shown that, in fact, properties tend to go somewhat less maintained.
And
buildings that could have been built don't get built. And honestly, if you really, really believe, and I think a lot of people do, up to and including the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, if you really believe that what we really need to do is produce a significant amount of new housing in the region, not just in Cambridge, then you really don't want to enact laws that are basically going to stifle that production.
So that's interesting. So you think that... House bill is
one of the things that I would love to do, though. I mean, if people start talking about this in a political context, like, would you support this? Because, you know, there'll be candidate forums and somebody will say, would you support Bill, you know, H-1316 to do this and that? And then candidates are going to have to say, well, yay, no, are they going to waffle? They're probably going to waffle like crazy.
Well, hopefully they give an intelligent response like
I'm good with that. I'm good with that. Give an intelligent response. You know, people will respect that.
Right.
But the thing is there are organizations that are going to be endorsing candidates.
Yep.
So honestly, before this year is through, I'm going to say to people like from ABC Group, I'm going to say, is this something you support? Because on the one hand, you say you're all for the production of new housing.
Yeah.
Right? But if you're going to then also say, but I also support doing this thing, which may very well have the opposite effect and stifle new housing.
I suspect they may not want to support
But so they may just say nothing, which to me is a very dishonest position. You know,
it's not their particular issue is not rent control. It's building housing, isn't it?
You know, I'm not convinced so much what ABC stands for anymore.
All right.
The thing is, when I first knew them, they were all about production of new housing, especially transit-oriented development. Mm-hmm. And I was very drawn to that. I said, it's about time we started talking about that.
What's changed?
I mean, that was DeVal Patrick's point of view as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, that's exactly what should happen.
So what's changed?
Well, what's happened is that you get more traction by jumping on board things like the affordable housing overlay and talking about the production of 100% of so-called affordable housing as sort of the be-all end-all. And that seems to be the tune that ABC is singing these days, which honestly, I can't tell them apart from the Cambridge Residents Alliance at this point either. But, you know, if this is going to be a political issue, even if it's just at the state level and it's just theoretical, I think if you're an organization that plans to endorse candidates, and if those questions are being put to the candidates, then it's absolutely fair game.
Well, they usually have their own forum that they run, right? So that's interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see how that plays out. You know. So anyway, that's one thing that's going on. Actually,
by the way, we should say if you are watching this that the hearing is televised, the Housing Committee hearing.
Yes, actually, all three of them will be televised.
So that's good to know.
You'll be able to see it after the fact as well. Right. And I have no idea whether this one's going to be primarily presentation with minimal opportunity for public input.
Right.
But you know, honestly, I've been thinking about this. You know, public input in the form of people stepping up to the microphone and saying the same thing 3 minutes a person. What I would encourage people to do is to start writing up thoughtful, multi-page points
that.
Of view.
There's some, lots of
some people do
that
it.
Come up.
Yeah, but honestly, I'm getting a little worn out from the same kind of.
But I bet they do both.
Yeah. So, but you know, if you're an organization, you know, express yourself as an organization. Yeah. I mean, individual express it, but it shouldn't necessarily just be always at the microphone.
Yeah.
So, one other thing is probably. We could do an entire program. Idea about condominium conversion. There was a city council order.
Yeah, I saw that
on the agenda
yesterday. Stuff and trying to understand what that was about.
Well, basically, it's just a request for information.
Is it looking for data.
Yeah, just asking for data about condominium conversion in Cambridge. So how many? When did they all happen? Are they still happening?
Give
some more information about it. And I thought, well, that's good, and I like hearing information. But you know, the truth is that this is 20 years after.
It's exactly 20 years, I think.
Yeah. The thing is that when rent control sort of became no more,
it's more than 20
and people
years.
Were trying to sort of carve out housing policy for the future, putting some kind of thought into the overwhelming amount of condominium conversion. Mm-hmm. Which took a lot of the multifamily housing out of the picture entirely.
That was before rent control was abolished. It was the late 80s, I remember.
But it was happening, but the thing is, it really took off after that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
But it was already happening.
But you could have at least maybe curtailed it a little bit. So.
You had you didn't really,
So we're just about wrapping up this half hour. But,
okay, well, we'll continue that.
We'll be back. We'll maybe start off with the next half hour on Cambridge Inside Out.